from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk. Your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, here we go. 5 o'clock. Happy Wednesday. Headlines on Softy and Dick are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
It just continues. My, oh, my.
Where do we start? Let's see. How about some news in the NFL? Jason Witten, former one-third of the famous Booger Joe and Jason trio on Monday Night Football a couple years ago.
Award-winning.
Was so well thought of on TV. He gave up his TV gig and went back to the NFL for a year with the Raiders, and now he's calling it quits again. 11-time Pro Bowl tight end, 2-time first-team All-Pro, Jason Witten retiring for the second time from the National Football League.
Adam Schefter reporting that the Hawks have hired Rams passing game coordinator Shane Waldron as their new offensive coordinator. Waldron, a Portland native that has been on the Rams staff since 2017 as tight ends coach, quarterbacks coach, and passing game coordinator.
There was a report today that said former Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt was working on a deal to join the New York Jets staff. That story is now being refuted by many people, including those in New York City.
Former Husky Isaiah Thomas says he will play for Team USA in the America Cup qualifying basketball tournament next month. Believe it or not, he will be 32 next week.
That makes me feel very old. Dude, Jason Witten was born in 1982, and he just retired for the second time from the NFL. Northwestern football coach Pat Fitzgerald has a brand new 10-year deal with the school that will take him through the 2030 season. All right, joining us right now on the radio program.
You guys had, what, Hugh Milner?
We got to get Hugh's take on the story that came out last night, which Hugh actually has not even been confirmed yet by the Seahawks. They haven't even announced it. Nobody else in the media has confirmed it. Is it possible Shefty's wrong about this? But Shane Waldron reported to be the new offensive coordinator of the Seahawks. Let's get your thoughts on that. When you heard that story, your take was what? Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a little bit of a gamble, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I think if you had had another retread, a guy who's been around and been fired and what have you, you know, waiting to get his job, you know, it's like the old game with Monty Hall. Let's make a deal.
Yep.
You know, door number two always has a nice TV set, right? Mm-hmm. So do you want that? Or listen, door number three could be like a year's supply of tampons, you know, and you know, but door number one could be a sailboat. So I think that in this case, yeah, I think there's possibly a lower ceiling, lower floor, but there's possibly also a higher ceiling for sure.
Yeah,
because if you have identified the brightest minds, at some point, all of the best have to get their first opportunity. Mm-hmm. And having been around Sean McVay, I think that's obviously the signature calling card, you know, reputed to be one of the brighter offensive minds, probably, you know, top five or six in the league.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, hopefully that's rubbed off on him.
By the way, just so you know, there's a lot of people that I know and you that could use a 3-year supply of tampons. For sure. Let's not just dismiss that, okay?
Well, you know, hopefully that we don't need too many of those, but I get your point.
Okay, all right, I'll try to move along.
Good luck with that.
When you evaluate this Rams offense over the last 3 years, was it more scheme making talent better? Or was the requisite talent there and the scheme really didn't make it all that much better?
Well, a little bit of both. I've studied a lot of them. And first of all, I'll just tell you my take on the Ram offense. First of all, you're talking about a guy in Sean McVay that got his background from Mike Shanahan at the Redskins, as did Kyle Shanahan. And so there's some similarities between the Rams and the 49ers and what they do. Okay, so what are the hallmarks of the Ram offense when they were really flying high? In no particular order, first of all, a lot of bunch formations and stack formations. So they had what's called reduced formations where your receivers are all close to the ball near the formation as opposed to spread out wide. And what that does is it allows for a lot of crossing routes. You usually, if everybody's spread wide, the defense has a better plan on, okay, only the inside guy is really going to be a formidable option on a crossing route. When you bring all of the receivers close to the formation, then any of the four can be a crossing route. and also from a squeezed alignment, then there's a lot of grass to the outside to throw the outbreaking route. So you could see an entire quarter, quarter and a half, where the Rams would merely line up in all of their formations, whether it's 2x2 or 3x1, with a single back in Todd Gurley, and they would be those squeezed formations. Number two, there's the outside zone, particularly to the left. The Rams have had one of the best left tackles in football in Andrew Whitworth. You've got, so you run the zone play, the stretch play to the outside left. If you ask all the offensive coordinators in the NFL, if you only get to call one running play today in a game or in a month, one running play, the vast majority of them would come back and submit to you the outside zone, because the outside zone is really many plays in one. The running back, he sets out, he's reading the block on the edge. And let's say Whitworth, if you don't have a tight end, this can change with the tight end or lead back, but in simple terms, you're trying to hook the guy who is responsible for the edge. You're probably not going to be able to hook him. If you do hook him, then the read for Todd Gurley is to bounce it outside, and he had the speed to do it, and he had the great instincts. Yeah. But if you don't hook him, then you're just reading one guy in on the block there. And so the outside zone can be to the outside. It can be in the six hole. I just said outside zone left. The seven hole, the five hole, all the numbers get smaller as you get closer to the ball. It could cut back.
Yeah, yeah.
And be an inside. So I was there in Denver when Mike Shanahan had Alex Gibbs. He's the father, the grandfather of the outside zone. And so you've got a guy who is very committed to the outside zone, number one. Number two off of that is the bootleg, where you have Jared Goff faking to the outside stretch and then coming out, staying on the move as a right-handed quarterback. That's why you want to have the yin and the yang with the outside zone, particularly left. You got a great left tackle, you got a right-handed quarterback. So you've got a lot of concepts. Then off of that, there was two wrinkles that were very distinctive. It's the naked bootleg stop, where what happens is, when if you're coaching Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, when you'd say, look, when you read boot, you got to turn and find the crossing route, the guy who's the intermediate crosser. But as I told you at the onset, with so many squeeze formations, finding that guy, there's a lot of dudes who could be that crossing route. Now when KJ Wright and Bobby have their back turned, now they can have a further scheme where they can stop, fake the bootleg, and then pull up and have stop routes, various types of stop routes. I'm using generic terms at the intermediate stages, 15, 18 yards. And then lastly, they had a very creative game in the screen game where they would do all everything I just described, stop, and then throw back. You fake stretch to Gurley, then you come back, you throw a bunch of window dressing, and then you throw the screen three seconds later to Gurley. And he was awesome at finding a good spot to A, catch the ball, B, find. So all of that was the hallmark of a McVay offense.
Right.
And the last point, why they've suffered, I think, they don't have speed at receiver.
Sure.
I broke down all 20 against the Dolphins. Every one of their receivers, I don't think, could break a 4-6 right now.
Well,
and that includes Robert Woods.
All right, Hugh, your line's breaking up a little bit there, so we'll try and fight through this. But, I mean, obviously, it just depends on how much of that Pete will allow him to do in Seattle. I mean, are we talking about fans should expect that this offense just looks exactly like the Rams' offense has for the last 4 years?
No clue. I don't know what he sold him. I think, obviously, you've been influenced by that. The Ram offense, here I'm lauding Sean McVay, but the reality is that while that appeared to be innovative, those attributes that I described, teams have adjusted to that. Other teams have copied it, so more teams see it, more teams practice against it. And so now the challenge of Sean McVay is, okay, can you adapt with the defensive adjustments? So by extension, anybody who can coach underneath them have that same challenge.
Hey, Hugh, the shaking up of the Rams dynamic. I mean, you're kind of robbing your rival here, a team that has gotten after you. How does that mean anything at all, that you can kind of steal what they've done? And obviously, your addition is their subtraction.
Well, I think certainly Ken Norton is going to visit with him and say, hey, I want to know everything that McVay's thinking. So I think can be an advantage for the defense. As far as how much you're robbing them and how much they suffer, We're just going to have to get truthful reports as to how much involvement Waldron had in terms of truly being a passing game coordinator. I mean, did he have the red zone, for example? Was that his baby? Was third down's baby? Or was this?
Hey, I'm going to jump in. Your line is really getting choppy there, pal. I apologize for that. It's getting really hard to hear. So here's what we're going to do. We're doing our big State of Seattle Football tomorrow broadcast. Yep, Hugh's going to be on the air tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock with Chuck and Buck, so we'll get more thoughts from him. But great question there and great point by Hugh that, you know, look, if anything, for a team that you said earlier the Hawks have had all kinds of problems with, Ken Norton's going to be able to pick Shane Waldron's brain the entire offseason about those two games that they'll play against the Rams. So, and they've been, you know, look, I mean, sometimes close games. They lost a close one, obviously, down there in L.A., and then beat them up here in Seattle in the regular season. So could that be the difference between closing that gap and not? Potentially, yes. Let's do this. Kevin Harlan's going to join us on the air next segment. And keep in mind that Kevin's dad, Bob, used to run the Packers back in the day, and he was in the house calling the Packers game for Westwood One Radio on Sunday. What does he make of Aaron Rodgers' future? What does he make of what happened to the Packers on Sunday? What does he make of, what's his name again? The Seahawks OC? What's the guy?
Waldron.
Shane Waldron taking over the Seahawks OC job next. Kevin Harlan joins the show coming up.
The Chiefs bench is delirious. The crowd with arms in the air.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio KJL.
Rolls out of the pocket, sidearm throw, caught, goal line, touchdown.
We take a look inside the NFL with CBS Sports and Westwood One's Kevin Harlan. Brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. The beautiful, brand-new Emerald Queen Casino, located on I-5 in Tacoma, is now open. Come check it out today.
Over the center, catch of the pylon. It's a touchdown! It's a touchdown!
Now with Kevin Harlan, here's Dave Softy Moeller.
They just put 2 more seconds on there, so now 8, Green Bay 39, 1st and 10, Brady shotgun snap. Running back block, winds up, long pass down the near side, caught for a touchdown! Falling in the end zone, Scotty Miller! The Buccaneers have scored! And the Buccaneers have used every second wisely to work out the first half, lead at 20-10. Amazing!
You know, I wonder aloud a lot if our next guest ever says to himself after a call, you know what, that was a damn good call. I am so good at what I do, because that was just, man, was that call good. What a great call of that last touchdown before the half. Green Bay and Tampa Sunday. Here he is, courtesy of the Emerald Queen Casino. It's our buddy Kevin Harlan. You ever do that? You ever just kind of look inward and say, dude, you are great at what you do, and man, that was an awesome call. Awesome. You were so good.
I could find about 4 or 5 things I probably would have maybe said different. I mean, the whole thing in this business, as you know, is you're just kind of, you're on the spot. Everything is live. You don't have a chance to go back and rewind, rewrite. You know, the writers, they can sit and write and write and write and write and have someone look over their shoulder and an editor back at the paper, back at wherever they're, you know, based out of, and they can say, I don't think that's the right verb, or I don't think that's the right word, or we got a better adjective, or something like that. You can't do that, and as you know, in live broadcast, you know it every day.
Yeah.
With the mic in front of you, with this show, you just hope it makes sense when it comes out. You listen back and say, well, next time, well, you know, maybe I'll emphasize this or that, or whatever, but that was a pretty big score by the Buccaneers, there's no doubt.
No, it's huge, and look, I mean, obviously the story of the game from a national perspective seems to be all the goof-ups by the Packers. I mean, you know, allowing that touchdown at the end of the half, not going for it on 4th down, the way the Packers responded to the last 2 Brady interceptions. What did you make of that game from a Packer perspective, man?
Well, I thought, you know, a couple times they weren't as aggressive as they probably should have been, Dave, and that came back to bite them. I think that they're at their best when they're kind of playing fast and trying to assemble quickly at the line and get that snap away and make sure that they maybe catch the defense from making a substitution or better fit the personnel they got to defend. I don't know how they're going to go back and dissect this, but clearly – all the coaches. I think Sean McDermott of Buffalo said the same thing. If you're on the losing side, you're always second-guessing yourself on, you know, should I have gone for it on 4th and 1? Should I have punted on 4th and 1? Should I have tried the field goal? Should I have gone for it on 4th and goal at the 2? You know, like all these different things, like there are hundreds of decisions that have got to be made. Like in that touchdown we just heard to Scotty Miller, you know, they were going to punt. And then they called a timeout.
Yeah.
And then they brought their offense back on the field. And they get that right before the end of the half. The defensive coordinator of the Packers, Mike Pettine, decided to go with a man-to-man on that side only. Every place else on the field, he had zone coverage. He had the kind of pressure package he wanted up front. But on that particular player, that Scotty Miller, he put an injured defensive back on that guy, and they burned him. And Brady knew it. Brady saw the man-to-man coverage right off the bat. He knew he was going to go there right off the bat, and that's why the pass was perfect. The catch was great. Had to be perfectly thrown. It was, and it was one of the biggest plays of the game.
Yeah, and now coming out of it, you know, we saw Rodgers, and look, it's minutes after maybe one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult loss of his career. He's raw, he's emotional, talking about not knowing what his future looks like, and now a couple days later, it's hard to fathom him not being there next year, is it not?
I don't know. You know, had Rodgers has lost four consecutive NFC Championship games. He's lost four in a row. Four in a row. He is not in my top 10 quarterbacks of all time. He might have been if he won it. Would have helped him.
Wow.
He might barely be sneaking into the top 20 of all time. I mean, I was just kind of just, those are the games. You're a number one seed, and the other quarterback has thrown three consecutive interceptions. You're at home. You've got to win that game. I'm sorry. You've got to win that game. Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Would have won that game. Listen, he had a great day, 346 yards, threw one interception. It was a bad one, but they were in the red. They were a great red zone offense. They were down there three times. They got one touchdown. I mean, you can't do that, and that's on the quarterback. Sorry, he missed a couple guys in the end zone. He threw late a couple times, and I get that he's gifted, and you know he spins it like few others who have ever played the game. But you got to be accountable, and you measure greatness in this profession by Super Bowls, championships, and he had a chance, and it went for the fourth consecutive time.
Yeah,
four straight, and that's a lot. Brady hasn't lost that many.
Yeah,
and the great ones don't. They find a way to win. They find a way, and he hasn't. And I think there's a lot of people saying, you know, it seems it's a lot about you, Aaron, and it's not about guys around you. Like this is a team thing here, and you always seem to kind of always reel it back to you. You know, what are you going to do? What do you think? You're like, well, you know what? My recollection is the Bradys and the Peyton Mannings, they never answered it that way. You know, the future is a beautiful mystery, and I don't know what's going to happen next year. He's got 2 years left on a contract that pays him $30 million a year. What do you mean?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, some of that, some of this stuff I just just wears a little thin sometimes.
Well, I think it's hard for me to not talk about Aaron Rodgers as a top 10 all-time quarterback because he has the highest passer rating in the history of the NFL, and he's won a championship. But do you know what his passer rating is in his five NFC championship games he's played in?
I think it's god-awful.
It's 83.7 with nine touchdowns. Yep, with nine touchdowns and eight interceptions. So, I mean, look, he didn't play poorly in the game on Sunday, but he hasn't been phenomenal in those games. He's thrown two picks in three of the five and a pick in every single one of them, and they're 1-4.
Listen, I have been as big an Aaron Rodgers fan as anybody, but he's been to one Super Bowl in this long career, and he's lost four consecutive NFC championship games. Somewhere along the line, a great quarterback figures out what he's got to do, whether he's got to be a little bit more emotional in that locker room, whether there's got to be more urgency in the play calls. They give him a lot of freedom at the line. He's making a lot of those calls himself. He's crossing one out and putting his own in there. You know, and he did. He had a terrific game. He's going to be the MVP this season. I told you 6 weeks ago I thought he was going to be the MVP, and sure enough, he should be for the regular season. But there's a problem in the playoffs with him. There just is. History tells you that. History shows you that. There's a problem with him in the playoffs. Mm. And I don't know if the stage gets bigger and he gets – I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. But it's an issue. And I just think that at this time that you instead of – talking about, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, like, why would you say something like that after just a gut-cutting loss? You know, the organization was the number one seed. They had a home playoff game, and the opposing quarterback threw three interceptions. If you can't win a game like that, I'm you know, how about that? Brady found a way to win on the road like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Even on a day when your passer rating is 78 and you've thrown three interceptions, you still find a way to win? Are you kidding me? That's greatness. That's what being a great quarterback is all about.
Well, speaking of greatness, Kevin Harlan's with us on the radio show, NFL and CBS, Westwood One, the voice of Super Bowl 55. Talk about Brady a little bit. 10 Super Bowl appearances now, double that of the next guy, which is John Elway with 5. You know, I keep seeing all this talk on social media about, well, there's no doubt now who the greatest is. Well, there kind of really wasn't a doubt to begin with, I think, who the greatest was. Now this is just getting to me almost silly what this guy's doing. And I asked Mike Holmgren on the show the other day, is this Brady's greatest accomplishment, getting this Buccaneer team to the Super Bowl? What do you think?
Well, if it's not his greatest, it's going to be certainly about as memorable a season as he's had, just because there was all this doubt. It's only because of Belichick. You've always been put in position. It was the benefit of the organization. It was those around you, on and on and on. And I don't think, you know, I mean, we've all got egos, and Tom's got an ego, but I don't know if he was driven by that scenario. I think he wanted a chance to be in a position where at the later stages of his career, he was going to have the right parts around him. I think he saw that the Patriots were not in that position. There were not the playmakers, the dynamic people that he thought he had to have around him to win. You know, Gronkowski had retired, so he knew that he wasn't going to be a Patriot. And what this does to me, Dave, is just puts him in a category unlike any other. Now, listen, Manning went to Denver, won a championship, and Montana took the Chiefs to the AFC championship. And we've seen these quarterbacks leave and go other places and find success. But I don't think anybody's done this, right? I don't think anybody. I think Craig Morton is the only quarterback who started a Super Bowl in each conference. And that was back in, what, the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So this is pretty shocking what he's doing, and very much an outlier of what his career has been all about. His career has been about, you know, consistency, familiarity, same system, on and on and on. This has been everything outside of that. New system, headstrong coach who wants to put his fingerprints on it, new weapons, no training camp, no preseason, everything virtual, you know, like on and on and on and on. And in this climate, he's gotten a team that's won 3 consecutive road playoff games against 3 division winners. And he beat the number 2 and the number 1 seed along the way on the road. That to me is unbelievable. That alone is incredible. But to do it with a new team and a new coach and a new philosophy, new way of doing business in a pandemic, and to do it again, I mean, he is clearly the greatest quarterback of all time.
He really is the Kevin Harlan of quarterbacks, meaning the delta between him and the next best guy is enormous. But Kevin's with us, courtesy of the Emerald Queen Casino. What do you make of this Matt Stafford situation in Detroit? There's talk about him maybe ending up in Santa Clara with the Niners. I mean, if the Niners get Matt Stafford, what does that do to the NFC West in your mind?
Well, it makes it different, certainly. I mean, you know, I think they're looking every team that is kind of on the precipice of quarterback change or uncertainty, or maybe on the precipice of a huge payday for an existing quarterback. I think they got to look at all this stuff, and I think Brady again just perpetuates the thought that you play for this year. It's hard to judge 2, 3, 4 years now. Some guys have got to do that. You wouldn't be a smart organization if you didn't. But the ultimate reality is you play for this year. And, you know, you go all in. And that's why the Buccaneers get a disgruntled Leonard Fournette who's on the waiver wire and on the street looking for a job. They go and they get an interesting guy in Antonio Brown. And you say, you know, we got to be all in here. You coax Gronkowski into getting out of retirement and being in a position where he's going to, you know, help your team, and he did, definitely. And now you think about, okay, we got Garoppolo, but do we bring in Stafford? Because clearly he is an elite quarterback, an elite passer in the NFL. But listen, we could have Deshaun Watson. We could have, we're going to have Matthew Stafford. You know, if the Rodgers rumors continue to simmer and looks like it's not going away, maybe Green Bay says, you know what? I mean, they would take a gigantic cap hit if they let him go. But you know, the weirder things have happened. So I think there's a lot of play. We may not have had a more significant offseason. Kirk Cousins may be cut go from the Vikings of big name quarterbacks out on the open market, like Brady was a year ago, than we will this offseason. This could be stunning. What happens? I think a team would be lucky to get Stafford. He clearly has not had the people around him to make him into one of the great quarterbacks.
Yep.
But individually, he's always done the job. I think he'd be terrific.
Well, Kevin Harlan again as our guest. And speaking of terrific, Patrick Mahomes going back to his second consecutive Super Bowl. Not much controversy or talk, at least radio topic-wise, coming out of that game versus Buffalo. I mean, I just think if you're a Kansas City Chief fan, it's time to get greedy. You know, his massive half-billion-dollar deal kicks in 2022. If you can win this, and you're talking about becoming potentially the first team ever in the history of the league to win three straight Super Bowls, I mean, that should be the goal, don't you think, right now for Kansas City? Never mind just winning on Sunday of next week. I say go get greedy and go get three in a row before his contract goes crazy.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. But I think Kansas City's going to be pushed by Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay is going to give them they're getting starters back. The Buccaneers are. Chiefs are without two starting offensive linemen, including their left tackle. He's gone. And I worry that the attrition of the season may be catching up a little bit with them. I think there are more playmakers defensively on the Tampa side than there are the Kansas City side. This is going to be a chore. It was a good game when they were down there. They played in November, and the Chiefs won by three. Tyreek Hill had 269 total yards. He was just magnificent. And Mahomes, I think, was just under 500. I think it was 460-something yards through the air. So he was great. But I think that when you sign a contract like that, the Chiefs made it loud and clear. As long as we've got the quarterback, we'll put the pieces around him. We're not just making that. That's why the whole motto was this year for the Chiefs, run it back to the whatever their motto was. But it was run it back, I think is actually what it was. And they said, that means let's go back again. And they're going to go. And they're really right now is not a team in the AFC that's going to push them. I mean, Buffalo's got to add some parts. There's no doubt. You know, certainly these other teams, that Cleveland is improving. And with a couple big-time additions there, that's going to be terrific for them. But let me tell you, Kansas City right now, it's Kansas City. And I think it's not a significant fall-off, but there's a gap. There's space. Yeah. Whereas in the NFC, I don't see that at all. In the NFC, I think a lot of teams are bunched up together, and any one of them could have been a number one seed. And if Brady stays in Tampa and plays another couple of years, and they continue to build around him, that team is going to be considered, you know, one of the teams you've got to beat every year, like Green Bay and you know, Seahawks. If they can kind of do some of the things they want to do, you know, they got a new guy coming in there to run their offense. I like that move. Mm. So I think there's a lot going on, a lot of play, and. But I do think there is a gap in the AFC, and I think the Chiefs see that opening, and that's why you signed that contract to that kind of quarterback, because he can do those kind of things and deliver.
Well, Kevin, you mentioned him right there. Before you go, don't know how much you know about Shane Waldron, but he's never been an offensive coordinator, at least not in the NFL. You know, he's a passing game coordinator for the Rams, who, you know, we spend the entire year kind of talking about how people have figured out the Rams' passing offense, and now you hire their passing game coordinator, and you're all fired up again as a Seahawks fan. I mean, any thoughts from 35,000 feet, I guess, on this hire?
I think Russell's going to welcome this. I think he sees how offenses around the NFL are evolving, and maybe they have not evolved the way he thought they would in Seattle. This puts him like with the Matt LaFleurs and the Sean McVays and that train of thought, you know, that quarterback friendly type of offense. Shanahan, this falls right into, you know, and Cliff Kingsbury down in Arizona. This is all falls right into that heading, right under that umbrella. And I think he's going to like that. Let me just tell you this. I can't believe they would hire a guy like that with that kind of importance. He's got to work so closely with your quarterback. If they didn't talk to the quarterback beforehand and say, hey, we're thinking about this. Love to get your thoughts because you're going to be around here for another, you know, 8-10 years. You're clearly our guy. Let's make sure that we're all on the same page here. And I think that's exactly what happened. And so if he checked off on it, he knows these offenses. You know, Russell's so smart. I think they're freshening up this offense, and I think it comes at a good time. Got a talent like Metcalf. You know they're going to get some more guys. They're going to have to. More people on that offense to help out Wilson. I think this coach will do a nice job implementing him, thinking outside the box, accentuating the positives that Russell has with that great arm. I think a little freshening up is always good.
Kevin Harlan, great stuff. We will talk about the matchup next week and what your plans are for the Super Bowl. Enjoy the week off, at least the weekend off from the NFL, and we'll talk in a week, man. Appreciate this, pal.
You got it. Thank you so much, Dave. Take care.
You bet. Kevin Harlan with us on the radio show. Big thanks to the Emerald Queen Casino. A lot to get to on a busy Wednesday with Softy and Dick. We'll get Dick back involved next right here on 950 KJ.
Staples.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your exclusive home of Super Bowl 55. Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
All right, boys and girls, Safi and Dickintail, 7 o'clock tonight. Mike Florio, is that right? Coming up on the radio show, 6:20 this evening. Lindsay Theory, you'll hear from her, covers the Rams for ESPN.com on the hiring of, what's his name again, the new OC?
Shane
Waldron.
I want to say Duffy Waldron.
Yeah, I might just kind of do that forever, by the way. You know, a guy's been here for 15 years. He's the head coach. Good. What's the guy's name again? How about what Harlan just said about Aaron Rodgers? Now, keep in mind, this is a guy in Kevin Harlan who I think all of us agree is about as professional comes when it comes to calling games in the NFL. You guys have heard how freaked out he is about talking about spreads and all that kind of stuff. Doesn't want to do it. Doesn't want to have any appearance of any shenanigans going on. But keep in mind, his dad used to run the Green Bay Packers back in the day. He's got a house in Wisconsin. I still think he's got a little bit of an affinity, which is fine.
Sure.
For the Green Bay Packers, listen to what Kevin Harlan said about Aaron Rodgers.
Rodgers has lost four consecutive NFC Championship games. He's lost four in a row. Four in a row. He is not in my top 10 quarterbacks of all time. He might have been if he won it. Would have helped him.
Wow.
He might barely be sneaking into the top 20 of all time.
Wow.
Oh, jeez. I heard the top 10. For some reason, I glossed over the top 20. That just hit me like a ton of bricks right there.
How about that? Not top 10 and may not even be top 20 in the history of the NFL. I mean, this is a guy who right now owns the highest passer rating ever in the history of the National Football League, right? He's 11th total in passing yards all time and still has a few years left to go in the tank. He is number 7 all time in touchdowns and still has a few years left to go in the tank. How many MVPs has Aaron Rodgers won in his career so far? This will be his second MVP. And he is saying he's a 3-time first-team All-Pro, 9-time Pro Bowler, 2014 NFL MVP, 2011 NFL MVP. This would be his third MVP, and he's not top 10, may not be top 20. How about that? I was like, wow. I was shocked to hear that.
Well, the two NFC Championship games that come to mind, obviously, the one we just watched, which I think we can all agree that Aaron Rodgers on the list of people to blame is way at the bottom of the Green Bay Packers on that. Coaching and the rest of his complimentary cast would be much higher than Aaron Rodgers. And we go back to the 2015 NFC Championship game where, I mean, if not for the goofiest things that could possibly ever happen to the Packer defense and the Packers special teams,
right?
Aaron Rodgers didn't play well that particular game, but he didn't cost his team the game.
Oh, unreal. I'm shocked to hear him say that. I don't think Kevin's right about that. I think he's wrong about Aaron Rodgers. I think you're right that Aaron Rodgers has been, in some ways, maybe the victim of not a lot of talent around him. Really, how many great, great wide receivers has Aaron Rodgers had play for him?
One.
How many great, great running backs has Aaron Rodgers had play for him?
Okay.
No great ones. Yeah, he's had guys that have had really good seasons, like Aaron Jones and Eddie Lacy had really good seasons, but they're not great running backs.
How many elite defenders, first team, all-pro, Hall of Fame defenders can you name off the top of your head that have played alongside Aaron Rodgers?
He's carried this. The reason they're in four NFC championship games is solely because of number 12.
I totally agree with that. So I'm going to name the Super Bowl starting quarterbacks, okay? All the guys out there that have started more Super Bowls than Aaron Rodgers. Because Kevin's point was you get great by making championships and winning titles. So you tell me when you see a name of a quarterback that right now you are comfortable putting above Aaron Rodgers on the list of quarterbacks. You can point to him. I have the bell. I'll go ahead and hit it for you.
Okay, if I hear one better than Rodgers,
yes,
I'm pointing at you.
Better all time. Patrick Mahomes. Okay. Russell Wilson.
It's close.
Brett Favre. Joe Theismann.
No.
Len Dawson. Eli Manning. Jim Plunkett. Bart Starr. Fran Tarkenton. Kurt Warner. Ben Roethlisberger. Bob Greasy. Troy Aikman. Jim Kelly. Peyton Manning. Roger Staubach. Peyton Manning.
Ring the bell,
Roger Staubach. Joe Montana. Terry Bradshaw. John Elway. Tom Brady. I rang the bell five times.
Yeah, and that's exactly... Aaron Rodgers is in the second five all time.
Yes.
He is not a top five quarterback in my mind. Now, he goes on to win...
So what is Harlan talking about?
Another MVP and another Super Bowl, maybe two more Super Bowls.
Right.
He's got a chance to crack the top five.
Right.
But...
Harlan's lost it.
He's a bulldozer. He's a beast.
Wow. Is it because, let's think of this. Let's think of this.
I think he's pissed off that the Packers lost.
He's a Packer fan.
And
also, you are looking at two diametrically opposed type of people. Kevin Harlan, one of the nicest human beings we have ever met, and Aaron Rodgers, who is salty to everyone, including his family.
Right, exactly.
So, yes. It may just be a personality thing that turns Kevin Harlan off of Aaron Rodgers.
Well, there's no doubt. And he even mentioned it there that he's tired of Aaron Rodgers making everything about him, right? That they lose the game on Sunday and the story is not the Packers losing or how do they move on. It's what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers. Is he coming? Is he going? And Mark Murphy's got to come out and say, we're not stupid. We're not idiots. We're going to bring the guy back. So it does seem like, he is a bit of a drama queen. Who did the story on him a couple years ago? Was it Wright Thompson? Somebody did that story. Maybe it was a different outlet.
Somebody buried him.
Just killed him.
Just buried
people
him.
Hated his guts. He was a class A jerk. Nobody liked being around him. So, and look, I don't blame Kevin because I think sometimes that stuff rubs off on you, right? I mean, you can only handle so much and you lose a game that, let's face it, man, you lost to a quarterback with a passer rating of 74 that threw three picks.
Yes.
Period. End of story. Seahawks lost to a quarterback with a broken thumb. It stinks.
And if I had to compare, you asked me about Russell Wilson, I think they're right there. I think Russell Wilson is at the bottom end of the top 10 right now, but he has a chance if he has more success. But if my choice, and if they're close like that, then personality matters to me. I would much rather root for a guy like Russell Wilson than a guy like Aaron Rodgers. But if my choice is a guy like Aaron Rodgers or just a mediocre quarterback who's the nicest guy in the world, give me the jackass 100 times out of 100.
So
I want to win football games.
You said Mahomes is better or will be better. You feel comfortable enough saying he's on a road that he will be better. Mahomes, Peyton, right? Joe Montana, Elway, Brady. Those five guys.
That's correct.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, I think Harlan's crazy. that is...
Now, there's a couple other guys that I might put there that haven't won Super Bowls.
Right.
I might put Dan Marino ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
Absolutely.
So he's in that consideration, too.
Would you put Drew Brees ahead of Aaron Rodgers? He's number one all-time in yards and number two all-time in touchdowns in the history of the NFL. He's a guy that's out there.
Talent. There's nothing in me says Drew Brees is a more talented quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. He's just not. Now, maybe you can put him higher because of his accomplishments, because of the numbers, but it's not because of the wins or the championships.
Yeah.
Rodgers has just as many of those.
Who's the all-time great wide receiver that you were thinking of that played alongside Rodgers?
Devontae Adams.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
I think he's freaking awesome.
No, I think you're right. Yeah,
might be number one in the NFL right now.
But that guy kind of literally, he's fairly new to the game. He just showed up a few years ago. I mean, he doesn't have a guy that was there 10, 15 years ago, and he's doing this with a totally different roster than it was 10 years ago. I'm with you, man. I mean, he needs some freaking help. And outside of Davante Adams, I don't think there's one guy he's played with that you can really, really say is elite at his position for multiple seasons. Maybe there's some offensive lineman. Maybe there's a defensive end or a defensive tackle.
Good tight ends,
a
but
corner.
Not.
Yeah, whatever. You know, somebody like that. But not like, I mean, dude, I just say this. Russell Wilson, over the course of his career, has had much better talent around him than Aaron Rodgers ever had in Green Bay.
Absolutely.
Ever. 5:55. We'll get a break. Headlines coming up on...
Now, from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All righty, here we go. Headlines on Wednesday night right here on Softy and Dick. Brought to you, of course, by, wait for it, our friends at VenueKings.com.
Stupid. I got to say, it's the stupidest thing in sports.
News coming out of the VMAC, actually more the Kent Police Department. Chad Wheeler, who was arrested Sunday morning on suspicion of domestic violence, has now been charged with first-degree domestic violence assault, domestic violence, unlawful imprisonment, and resisting arrest. His next court appearance is set for February 9th. Seahawks today announcing Chad Wheeler has been waived by the Seahawks. He is no longer a part of the team.
Three games in the NBA nearing their conclusion. Pacers lead the Hornets right now with 5 minutes left, 101-96. Domantas Sabonis nearly a triple-double, 20-10-8 assists right now in that game. Cavaliers lead the Pistons with 6 minutes left, 108-89. Colin Sexton with 26, and the Kings over the Magic right now on the fourth, 98-84.
You know who Sabonis' father is, by the way? Any idea? Who would that be? No, that's wrong.
Not my Vetus.
Your Vetus. Just not
no,
my
it's
Vetus.
Not my Vetus.
He's your Vetus. Oh, he's our Vetus?
He's
I thought
our
he was
Vetus.
Your Vetus. Okay. Let's see. Seahawks. Adam Schefter reported yesterday. Here we are 24 hours later, and still no confirmation from anybody that Seahawks are hiring Rams pass game coordinator. What's his name again? The new guy?
I'm going to forget. Shane Waldron.
Shane Waldron as their new offensive coordinator. He's 41 years old.
41 yards.
How about that? Been with the Rams since 2017. Spent time with the Pats in 2008-2009. Was given a pair of binoculars by Bill Belichick as a parting gift.
The Sounders have re-signed goalkeeper Stephen Fry and defender Jimmy Madranda to contract extension. Wow.
That's not correct. It's Stephen Cleveland, the backup goalkeeper, not Fry.
Is that right?
Come on, man.
It's not Stephen Fry, Dick.
Jeez, God. Jackson, what are you doing?
Wow. Makes sense
well, thank
of
you
this,
for correcting
me. How amazing was that?
Flicked on and flicked in!
I must have literally read a story that says re-signed goalkeeper Stephen, and I just stopped there.
Okay, I'm going to give you a story. You tell me if this is correct.
All right.
Okay?
It's wrong.
Fine, I'll just forget it then. All right, 6:04. Michelle Ludka of Channel 13, who apparently also does some stuff for the Seahawks. Is that right on their website, Seahawks.com?
Yes.
Spoke to KJ Wright today about the accusations and the charges against his now former teammate in Chad Wheeler. Check this out.
Chad Wheeler and the domestic violence incident with his girlfriend, and I'm sure you know him personally. It's an issue that we keep seeing surface in the NFL. Kind of your general thoughts on what's happening here.
Yeah, it's there's zero tolerance for that. When I saw the pictures, I was just devastated and heartbroken that happened. And then it's going to be addressed, and if it does come out to be true, he has to suffer the consequences. And so it's unfortunate that had to happen. We have domestic talks every year. We go over it, and there's no room for it. He has to answer to what happened, and I just hope that the young lady pulls through and comes back to a full recovery.
Don't you think it's unique to have a current player commenting on something like that? You don't hear that very often. I'm glad he did it. I'm very glad that KJ Wright did it, but I thought that was very unique to have a current player commenting on a situation like that that is still so raw.
Well, you have to be a guy that is totally comfortable in his own skin, which KJ Wright is completely, probably maybe the most on the, you know, one of the most on the team in speaking his mind. I mean, I guess what would have been the alternative? I mean, she asked him the question. So, I mean, you just give an answer, non-answer is what you're
just
saying?
Just not say anything. I mean,
just say, hey, I can't comment on that.
Yeah, I don't even know what the setting was. Was this something for their website? Do we know what the setting was? Was it for Q13 Fox? Was it for Seahawks.com? Was he doing a regularly scheduled hit with them anyway? I mean, not that it matters. I think it's great that KJ Wright came out and say that. I think everybody involved in the organization. I think Pete Carroll should say something. I think John Schneider should say something. I'd love to hear Jody Allen, who we don't hear speak at all, say something about this. And I realize that from a legal perspective, there's certain things you can and cannot say. You don't want to go out there and say something that may end up getting you screwed in court one day down the road. But I don't know. I just was, I guess, today, Dick, a little bit turned off and a little bit surprised at how long it took the Seahawks to denounce any of this stuff. And it just kind of felt like it did not happen until there was a huge uprising on social media. Maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe I'm reading that wrong. But this happened on Sunday morning. It's now Wednesday afternoon, right? This was late Saturday night into Sundays. You've had Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and three quarters of the day Wednesday to come out and say something like this. And I don't know, maybe they wouldn't have said anything unless the pictures had not been released and there was not an uproar about it.
And if that's true, if they would not have said it, it would have been purely based on the fact that they're probably just like, listen, this guy was never ever going to play another down on this football team, and it was barely here in the first place. So, I mean, I guess it's a question of, hey, if you're just a part of the organization at any point during that calendar year, even if the season's over, some people say you absolutely have to say something about it, and others would say, I don't know, man, he's not even with the team anymore.
Well, I guess I would just say this, and I get that perspective of it, but every report that came out that mentioned Chad Wheeler the Seahawks attached to it, every single one, right? Like, let's say you owned a business, or let's say your swim club or your kid's school or whatever, there was a student or an employee that was no longer there and did something heinous. But every time they mention him, they mention your swim club or they mention your school. At some point, you got to come out and disassociate yourself with the guy. So, and I would also just ask how many folks even knew that Chad Wheeler's contract was up. How many folks even knew who Chad Wheeler was? I mean, there's a lot of folks that had no idea who the guy was.
Well, that's kind of
the point. I remember him getting his ass kicked in the Giant game.
Right.
I guess that's
kind of making the point on the one side that the Seahawks didn't even necessarily have to address it because, like you said, 90% of all fans probably didn't even know that he was on the Seahawks.
What do you lose by denouncing it, though? What do you lose by denouncing it quick and swift, coming out and making a statement? This, to me, is almost the exact point in time where somebody like Jody Allen should step up and say something, right? For a gal, for a woman like her, of leadership, you know, somebody who obviously has a very high place in the organization, the highest place of all. I thought it would have been great to hear from somebody like her today.
I think in some situations, by not saying something is endorsing something. I do not think this is that type of situation.
Well, let's ask Mike Florio about it, ProFootballTalk.com. His thoughts on, what's the guy's name again, the new offensive coordinator?
Waldron.
Shane Waldron. Yeah, thanks for that. We'll get his take on that. We'll get his take on Matt Stafford. Rumors abound he might be going to Santa Clara to play for the 49ers. All that and more, lots of stuff. His thoughts on the weekend that was in the NFC and the AFC. Mike Florio, courtesy of Simply Seattle, coming up next.